This is Joe, and you're listening to the O Gatekeeper podcast, where every week I'll be talking to my people about what gets them up in the morning, what their purpose is, and why they make things. Hopefully, it will inspire you to do the same. Thank you. You can get episodes early and without advertisements over at ogatekeeper.com, as well as weekly bonus episodes, playlists, and my Joe and Friends series. Enjoy. This week we have my friend and hero Jenny Beth, who has inspired me to make and to be fearless in changing my pathways. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Happy?
How are you? Yeah, I'm happy. Yeah, of course.
And from what I can tell, normally, if you're happy, it's because you're busy.
Me? Yeah. Or you mean people in general?
No, you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Yeah, I'm busy, but sometimes I'm also amazed how much time I have for myself. But I guess that's the life I chose. And sometimes I'm quite impressed with it. I can have a whole morning sometimes because I think that's how I've directed things in my life to be able to have those moments. And I think actually the part of the work, the part of what we need to do as artists is sometimes to just have time with nothing, because it's never nothing, isn't it?
Me and my therapist kind of worked on the idea that you slot in some time in your day calendar to do nothing. It's quite a weird concept, and it seems quite luxurious, but then you think about it and it's like the power of procrastination for me is key. Like, all of my work comes from experience, as does yours, I expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, procrastination is a bad press, doesn't it? I mean, it's, I think dreaming or daydreaming or, you know, even just hypnosis, at least it's a form of hypnosis in a way, where you can go into a place of think, even when I'm writing, for example, I've been writing every day, but I didn't realize I was doing it, which took me a few weeks to realize that actually it's something I was doing every day recently. I don't always do it, but there are periods of life where I do write every day. And the other day I was like, it's been like a few weeks now and I've got all this writing I've been doing. Yeah, so that's why I'm happy. So to answer your question, like, I'm happy, not happy when I have a lot of things to do. I'm happy when I'm being creative.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I didn't mean just in an avoidant way. I meant being productive. Yeah. All right. Like, for the people listening, what does writing mean to you?
It's just another form of trying to breathe, you know. It is a way of putting together the broken pieces. I also write to remember. I write to fix things, but to be able to not really make sense, because you can never really make sense in life, right? I don't think anything makes sense, but I think words for me are, it's a way to it's almost like a rehearsal for life. It's like a way to analyze is not a right word, because you analyze when you go to your therapist, which is a different thing. Writing is observing, the capacity to look, to observe, to, because I think things around us are waiting for us to talk about them, you know. Like, if you see a shadow, if you see something very simple, a bird or a friend, the hand of a child, I don't know, like, so many things you can see, and words are there to free them, you know, or to make them seen.
That's a beautiful way of thinking about it. Setting things free. memories.
Why do you write?
Why do I write?
Mm-hmm.
To sell t-shirts. I really hope that pisses someone off. And for that person, go fuck yourself. No, I start
My
again.
God. No, don't. I lo That's the best answer. I love
Fuck
it.
it. All right, we'll keep it there. I mean, do you know what I don't do? What I find, I'm intimidated by you in a writing and reading sense. You're very prolific in both. I worry about memory, as in I can't
Yeah.
remember much, and I don't journal. Steve Lamacq told me I should journal. He was very, it was just I'm remembering him saying it because he was so serious about it. It's like the life you're living, you should 100% write things down so that you can explore it and remember it and enjoy it later on in life. And I thought that was quite interesting. And then, of course, I didn't write a fucking word. But
I don't see that as an issue though. Like, I think we're all very different. I think I bore myself as well sometimes with being too, I envy you for being also a bit more light about things. Maybe I'm also heavy with words, And culture is heavy and literature is heavy sometimes, and I try to throw them out the window often. They are my refuge, but they're also like a cage sometimes. And I admire people who forget. I do. I think it's quite a
I think there's the grass is always greener, I guess, and that's it. But there's something I've there's things like sometimes I feel like I'm too focused on the future all the time, like I'm always onto the next thing and blah blah blah. But really, I think I do. I'm very I practice a lot of gratitude, and I think that comes out in live shows and albums and relationships and friendships. You get up in the morning and you just realize how lucky you are. So I think that's a like, and I think artists, as you were saying, in a way of exploration, when you write things and you set them free, that sense of exploration is gratitude. You're exploring the life you've been given and understanding you'll never understand it. Well, that's the magic of it, right? What I wanted to do as a podcast, what I wanted to do for people really, is make things make happy. Make things make happy. That's it. And I think a lot of people look at people who are successful in their creative language and assume either there's a way to do it, a way, or that it's down to genius or just hard work or knowing all the chords, knowing all the notes, writing every day, not writing every day, whatever it is. And I think what I'd like to do is just to encourage people by speaking to lots of people that I admire or I'm scared of, and just try and encourage them to just go out and explore, as you're saying, really. So I just wanted to get behind your creative language, so to speak. All right. So I've got a bunch of questions. It's quite rigid, as I am. But
Do we have to get behind, or are we going under or above?
I'll be Little Spoon. Okay. You just take my lead, and then I'll run with it. So first question. How would you describe your creative language?
I'm trying to think what is a creative language, because there
Sounds
are
like the
many.
cage is already there. That's me
Right. Just
analyzing as
speaking
well.
too
Sorry,
much.
I apologize.
No, that's fine. I would say simple, if I have to choose one word.
You can waffle for 2 hours if you want, mate.
I would say when I started writing the new record, You Heartbreaker You, with Johnny Hostile, I think one rule we set with ourselves is, well, actually there were several, but one of them is like, it has to be simple. It has to be, it's not as complicated as we think it is, because I think we often, delay or procrastinate in making things because we think it has to be this sort of complicated journey to it, or and actually it's from my heart to your heart, you know, it doesn't have to be more complicated than that. It's a straight line. And if it's not fun, if you're bored, delete. That's the main
Interesting.
thing.
Interesting you say that, because did am I right? Am I okay to say we can cut it out if not? Didn't you delete most of the album?
I did delete an
Or
entire
albums?
album. Yeah. I mean, originally when I started writing this album, I was thinking, okay, I'll keep that amount of songs from this previous album, and I write another half. And then as soon as I started writing, I realized, no, this is going to be a whole new record. So there is an unreleased record. Yeah. That's never come out.
Is that, I think that's fucking brave and great to be able to be like, this ain't it, delete. Because you put a lot of work and effort into things, right? It's not like you just.
Yeah, but also the context of it was, I think I you know, in 2020 I released a record, To Love Is To Live, and it was the worst year to release a record, and I couldn't tour for a year and a half, and I couldn't do and promote this record the way it should have been promoted and out there. And then my dad had a serious accident, and I saw him die in front of me, and then thankfully resuscitated. But I think all these experiences, I was writing this unreleased record in that period of time, and in a way, the music was, I was sort of out of my body in a way. I was there, but not there. And I think, so I think the music in a way reflected that. So what I'm really proud of with this new record is that I really feel, it's a paradox because also there's less of me in it, but I think that's why it works better, because the unreleased record is too much of me. It's too personal. It's almost like trying to talk about something too soon, you know. It's almost like if you write to, it's almost like when you love someone and you write bad poetry, you know. You know, because it's like you're too much in the feeling, you're in that space too much,
So
and
I mean,
nobody
I'm
should read
curious
that,
about this. Well, yeah. That's I find that fascinating. So there's a sense of like, because it's not oversharing, it's almost like sharing without understanding. Or is it
Without
like,
the distance, the creative distance, yeah, maybe. Is that what you
creative
mean?
distance. I don't
What?
know. I love it. This is sick. I think that's fascinating. Because like, I know exactly what you mean. As a someone who's emotionally matured, probably in the last couple of years, really, to a
Thought you
point
were going to
where
say the last couple of hours.
I think I regressed about an hour ago. Fuck me. We'll talk about that afterwards. But like, that thing of like, understanding where anger comes from, in therapy, and understanding where resentment comes from. Why do I resent that person? Because they're not doing anything wrong, etc. Understanding where certain, it's not even toxic, it's just certain emotions or certain reactionary behaviors come in when you don't really understand why it's happening to you, as in the feelings. So understanding that, I guess there is a sense of you're not creative when you're angry, you're not creative when you have resentment, you're not creative, or you're not fluent in your creative language when you're reacting to something, maybe. Do you know what I mean? So
It doesn't
if
mean
you're
that you
not,
shouldn't do it. You should,
no,
you
yeah,
know,
of course. Well, I mean, that's literally that is exactly what you should do, is make. It just might not be your best work.
instead of punching someone.
punching someone or something, like a Tory. Like, I just think for me,
Should always patch a Tory.
yeah, true, true. I think like for me, it's like, my first idea is often the best. So if I go after that, I start overthinking and it becomes too self-referential or not referent or overly referential to other people's fucking needs and that.
No. I agree with that. I do think that the first ideas are always the best. But it's a matter of being in that space where the first ideas are not oversharing. You know, oversharing your little self. You know, I think you need to be, for me anyway. Like I feel like I create the best work when I'm connected to something other than my little drama. So that demands an amount of happiness, you know. It demands for me a certain balance. Like when I wrote You Heartbreaker You, I was in my studio in the countryside. I was working every day. I was so happy. I mean, it was like this sort of freedom of going to the studio, then going to make some food, then napping, they go back to the studio and oh, Johnny's been working on that and has already moved to another space, and then I'll add that, and then laughing and talking about shit, and then have dinner, watch a film, and then back in the next day. So this sort of creative space where it's not just about trying to revenge about something, trying to, you know. It is, you're in the work and you're in conversation with the work, and that is more important than you trying to solve a personal issue through your art. You know, art is not a bin for your inner turmoil. You know, art
No.
is like someone is not a bin for your inner woes. You know, you
That's,
need to
yeah.
edit yourself in a way.
I like the idea of that as a seeing it as like your little self. Because one of the questions that leads in from that would help is because you talk about the simplicity of your creative language, and I don't know, protecting and nurturing the little self, right? But one of the things is like there's a youth, there's a young spirit in creativity, right? So I wanted to ask people and yourself, how much of your upbringing remains in your creative language, and how much of your young spirit remains in it?
Put that. I think it's absolutely there, 100%. I think the young spirit, the who you were as a young person. When I mean young, I mean before. I mean everyone is not everyone is equal in that, but like before life starts to suck, you know, or things start things. So some people it's very early on. Some people it's as late as possible, really. But when you're a young soul, so. There, for me, there is this sort of massive hope and inspiration and desire to meet people, to create, to live life, to experience things. I was like, and I feel that in my best adult life, that's what I get, you know. And when I'm being creative, I'm fulfilling that demand. Almost, or that promise to myself that I made when I was young. The upbringing is, I've struggled a lot with the upbringing. Like all my 20s, I changed my name. I moved to a different country. I moved to England. I wanted to wipe out the fact that I was French. Had no mother, no father. I didn't want to have anything to do with my. Where I came from, because I felt that in order to become yourself, you have to detach, you know, from where you're from, which is kind of a fantasy, I think. It has a positive thing, which is that if it's not too late, then you can come back. Sometimes it is too late.
Not for you though. You had bread and jam with your French parents this morning.
Yeah, but I did come back, I think a couple of years before my dad's accident. So my dad is a complete different person now. So I had maybe a couple of years where I could enjoy his presence the way he was, as I always knew him. So yeah, if you can come back and then, because family, I think, is an issue. Family is you're born into systems, like people have roles and you assigned a role, and it's very hard to break those molds, and you have people's expectations, and you and I think I don't know, it for an artist, I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, but I think being an artist is against fulfilling expectations in terms of, you know.
I mean, I think it's interesting. I think one of the things about being born into a system, as you say, one of the things that, like, a lot of your roles that you're assigned are assigned to you because of the misgivings and the kind of the worst traits of the people bringing you up. It's not necessarily pressures of you playing roles because, like, it's super, the super healthy parts of your parents is coming through. It's normally the toxic stuff, the toxic memory of their fucking
That
wartime
sticks.
and Victorian parents doing all sorts of crazy shit, kind of foreshadows our upbringing in some way. I mean, my dad was an artist, so I had a different concept of, like, being an artist. But I think as a dad, I see just little things that you break. You just break the chain, and I think doing what you did, or doing what I did, whatever, coping mechanisms of finding and exploring who you are vital. Whether that's changing your name.
I don't. I think you inherit the shit, you know. And I was trying to avoid the shit. I was trying to avoid the neurosis, of my mother, of, you know. But I was brought up with culture, you know. And probably the part that scares you about me is that is, you know, it's like, my parents were coming from countryside. You know, they were farmers. Children and they grew up in a time where they could go free to university for free and become teachers and more money than their parents and travel, get culture, have holidays. You know, that was a different life from their parents, totally. And so they brought their daughters as, you know, I didn't have TV. I didn't see Star Wars until I was 25. But I knew all the Hitchcock movies and Truffaut and the Nouvelle Vague and all that. Like, I was cultured in the, you know, the most intellectual leftist, new middle class teachers, you know. That's where I grew up with. And sometimes I struggle with that background, but also it's a richness.
It is a
I it's
richness. Fascinating.
Yeah, and it's also a disappearing class, you know.
Yeah, it's different, obviously, because in France, just for some people that might not know, it's a lot more subsidies with the cultures, with the arts, and a very different attitude towards creative thinking, right, in France.
Very pretentious, yeah, somehow, like very
Yeah.
intellectually, you know. It lacks
Sounds like I'd
humor
like it.
sometimes. I don't know. Do
Excellent
you like
t-shirts
me?
being someone else. Well, fuck it. We're all pretentious in our own way. Fuck 'em. Oh, interesting question then, from what you've just said. How old do you feel when you write, and how old do you feel when you perform?
I feel my age. I feel 40. I am
Do
40. I'm
you?
not going to try to pretend. Well, like you, we are the same age, right?
Yeah, but you feel your age when you write and perform.
I'd say that because I answered a bit quickly, but because I'm trying to answer quickly,
Yeah, it's good to be instinctive. Great.
not to look pretentious, but I did say that because I never asked myself that question, but also because I feel I should feel 40,
Why do
I
you think you
think
should feel 40?
because I should be real about who I am and what I present, and it's about this sort of putting down the armor. And I feel like for a woman saying she's 40 and stepping on stage is putting down the armor, and it's also who I am. It's a fact. So I like to be aligned with that in a way. But I have to say that all the ages come in, you know.
Is
But
that
why acting silly, for instance, on stage, why should it be like a 3-year-old thing? Why can't it be a 40-year-old thing, you know?
absolutely, yeah. But for me, it's a feeling. So when I'm talking about wanting to be held, which is something that I try and nurture in a way with my audience, because
Oh,
I had
yeah.
a sense of isolation growing up. Like, I felt quite lonely until my 30s, really, and that came out in lots of toxic ways. So I tried to use music and poetry as a way of building a connection. And that yearning to be held is something that makes me feel 12, because that's when my mum started getting ill. Do you know what I mean? And I think for me, that's just it's a beautiful thing to
Okay.
open up and ask to be held. And then in that moment, I feel that age. But that doesn't mean that I'm not
Yeah,
by
I know what you
myself
mean.
in my raggedy old fat 40-year-old body. I'm trying though.
No, I get it. It's beautiful what you just said because I've seen you on stage so many times, so I know what you mean about being held, and I think that's actually a very beautiful thing to say about you, because you do thank your audience every time you perform for holding you know. You always say thank you for letting us express ourselves or something like that, and giving us the space. And I do share that with you. I think I love the love I lacked when I was younger. I get it from the stage, from the audience being there, and the love that is shared at that moment is for me a sort of higher kind of love. There's no other really, nothing really matches that. It's once you've known that, you know it is a quite a special form of love.
Really is.
That is quite unique, you know. But so to answer your question, sorry, I think I would be 8 then, because somehow psychologically I always come back to that age, because that's the age where I was attracted to girls and boys. I didn't know what that meant. It's the year where I discovered music. It's the year where I was bullied a lot at school. It's the year also where I almost died twice, because I had like
Twice.
health issues. Yeah, I had health issues and I was operated, and then I did like I mean I escaped. I was talking with my mom about it, like, actually, and she saved me twice that year. And so that was kind of a turning year for me.
Sounds like an
And
intense year.
yeah, it was mad. It was mad. But the most part was the rejection. I was so rejected by my young peers, for some reason, and I could never really understand why. And I think it's because I was too intense. I wanted too much, too soon, too. I wanted 100%. I wanted everything. I still do, actually.
Well, it's a beautiful thing to try and get that through your art and music, which I definitely feel. I think there's definitely an intensity with your art. Absolutely. And that's not something that intimidates me. Actually, something that makes me feel there's other shit. It's my baggage. Don't worry about that. But what doesn't intimidate me is your intensity with your work. It's a very revealing and vulnerable position to be up there in front of so many people and dedicate. That dedication, that conviction, that in a fucking in an age of cunts, in an age of, cringe and ick, and to be the kind of the dedicated is just it's way more fun and free, and it's beautiful to see. How do you see your worth as an artist, and how would you like your your gift is the art that you've given the world, right? How would you want that to be remembered? And how would you like to be remembered as an artist?
Well, there's several answers to that. I think it depends. Sometimes I feel it's worth nothing. Because I think of the Carl Sagan pale blue dot text, because I think that, everything that creates planets and life was born from the explosions and the death of stars, and that made planets and made life. And now we are essentially and poetically stardust. And for me, I think of that every day. I think of death as well every day. I try to speak to the people I love, knowing we all gonna die. So that really changes the way you interact with people. And so art in that perspective for me is, sometimes it feels like it is, not saying it's nothing in terms of like it's, it doesn't matter. It's more like it's, art is a way to breathe. Like I really don't see, it's a form of expression and communication that is natural to me, or at least I think to everybody, that, as you say, we destroy, like, from a very young age. We don't encourage it. We put you in a behind a desk in an office, and then you never create anymore. And that's, for me, that's not natural. That's completely insane. And so saying it's natural is also saying it's, it's as natural as breathing. So does that make it important? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to put it in a scale, but at the same time, can art save the world? You know, like that if you want to save the world, I think you need guns or money, you know, if you want to change the world. But art has a place, and I think small things in the right context can change the world. That I believe in that. I do believe I've had experiences where I've played shows in towns with 10 people. We've all been through that. And then 10 years later, someone comes to you and says that they've been there and they started a band because they saw you that day. And that seems nothing, but it's not nothing. It is everything for me. So...
It is, because that, like, there's no, that's, like, the one I want from it is to just encourage to be a cheerleader, you know, and just be like, you can do it. All you got to do is
a cheerleader.
But, you know.
I need a video now.
I just want to encourage people to be like, you know, just writing a poem that no one else reads might save your life. You never know. It might stop you killing someone else. It might make you realize you want to quit your job. Whatever it is, and like,
oh yeah,
you know,
yeah. Or also it's important when life presents alternatives, you know, and I've always tried to do that. What if your kind of love doesn't match the script, you know, what do you do? But a song can save you there, because I've had desires to kill myself from anxiety, like when I was in my 20s, like I anxiety can be so high and it can be so constant. It's only when I was sleeping that I didn't feel pain. So at some point you look at yourself and you're like, do I throw myself out this window? Like, how do I end that fucking pain? And then music saved my life, community saved my life, because it's not just music and you creating, it's also finding a family. And that's why I was, you know, saying you need to escape your family, but there is another family waiting for you. And we are absolutely never told that. Like, I was absolutely unaware of what was waiting for me on the other side. But there's a whole army of people with open arms waiting for you to give you their love. And you have to take the leap of faith and jump without knowing they're waiting for you. And that's the message that I'm trying to preach everywhere, but it's like, we're there, you know. And that's why I do my label partner. That's why I do the TV show I co-host. That's why I do, because I try to bring young people in. My dad always done that in theater. Like, he's always, I've always seen him, like, you know, helping the grassroots of theater writers, for instance, or young actors, telling them you can go to a big city, you can become, you know, this, you know, your dream can happen. And he raised me like that as well. So, and then on top of that, there is internet now, and like this social media, and you know, this hyper speed, hyper sexualized, hyper everything, you know. It's like a
Aggressive.
nightmare of validation and emptiness, you know. And I feel like sometimes we just ghost haunting each other. And
It's a,
but
yeah,
it,
it's
you
a
know.
fucking bizarre. It's a bizarre thing. It is a bizarre thing, that dislocation, the window into it, you know, like, because we are just haunting each other most of the time in this
Yeah.
existence. I'm seeing all these people's existence in their life, and like them eating, making a sandwich, and like driving their car, or talking about a song, and they're like, "What the fuck am I looking at? Why am I sat in your car watching you eat a fucking chicken nugget?" So I mean, loads of, you've been great. This is so. Is it, what do you think about this? Do you think it's weird that I'm like reading certain questions from a list and having to look? Is that bad?
I think it's quite
Oh,
cute.
thank you.
You rereading from a list. It's
I've
very
got a good
cute.
one for you. Thank you very much. What's your most accomplished piece of work?
The next one.
Always.
It's always the next one. Yeah, I can't really think differently.
Yeah,
Because
always.
somehow when you
Oh,
put
Jesus.
something out, I mean, I still love everything I've put out, but you can see all the mistakes. And I think when you close a drawer, you know, another one opens, and with all the things that you haven't put in the previous one, and suddenly you think, oh, I need to do that now. So the next one is the one that preoccupies and interests me, and it will always feel more accomplished in its period of creation, you know, than what I've done before, because otherwise it would be weird. If there was something in the past that you feel, oh, that's what I picked, like, wow, this, I will never be, you know, higher than that. And I felt that way sometimes about Savages, you know. I felt that, oh, what if I pick there, and then I'll never get that grace again. Because I think it was quite a graceful moment. It was like flying on a sort of, I don't know, on a horse. I don't know why I'm saying that, but I also think that's not true. It's almost like it's the same disease as looking at pictures of yourself young and being like, wow, I was so beautiful, but I'm beautiful now as well, you know? And also, when in 10 years' time I look at myself now and be like, wow, so I was so beautiful, you know? Beautiful, when I say beautiful,
Yeah,
it's not
you
physically
know.
beautiful, but like, you know, interesting. And I had no idea I was that interesting, you
Yeah.
know what? trying to love yourself in the present, I
Yeah,
guess.
that's it. What do you think 85-year-old you would say? What advice would they give you in terms of do less of, not just
I
calm
think
down on this, but
if I
that's what that's
survive
a.
and I get to 85, that's fucking cool. Imagine you and me as 85. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, that'd be it'd be interesting. I think I'd definitely be in a wheelchair by then.
Okay, we'll push you.
Oh, you'll push me, will you? Fuck's sake.
Yeah, well, of course.
Don't
If
patronize
I
my
have the strength.
85-year-old, okay?
Yeah,
Fuck.
but maybe I'll be in a wheelchair as well. Okay, let's do it in a
Yeah,
wheelchair
we'll be having
together. But yeah,
races. Right,
oh
so.
yeah, that's cool.
What
So
about.
I think I would say, don't worry. I mean, like, just be present in the present, you know. I mean, I guess I'm already doing that though.
Yeah.
I don't have much limits. That's the thing. It's like I don't really have. I realized that recently. I don't really set myself much limits. I mean, my only limit is not hurting people. I think people I love. But apart from that, I don't think I think I will be happy in 8 to 5 if I keep living the life the way I do it. I think I'll be content about, I haven't missed out on much. Like I've done a lot.
Magic. That's great. Okay, well, in that case, one more question, if that's all right.
Yeah, it's fine.
What is your death row dinner? I've asked you this before.
My
Death row dinner. You're on death row. I mean,
Oh.
hypothetically, because you probably wouldn't be that hungry, but imagine it's your last meal. What would you
Yeah.
pick it?
Well, why that question? I'm curious. It's quite a strange question.
Because I'm absolutely obsessed with food. I love it.
Yeah, I know. I've been to restaurants with you.
Excuse me. Don't shame me on my incredible appetite.
I have the same appetite, so don't worry. I'm not shaming you. It's a compliment coming from me.
Thank you. Are you in Paris?
Yeah.
I really want to go back there soon. I'll give you a shout.
Well, let me know when you're here.
So it like the reason why I'm really interested in it is because
Yeah.
it's I don't want to be too like fucking aggressively analytical about it. I just think it's quite a beautiful thing to end a conversation on, is thinking about something that often, especially death row dinner, is quite you come to comforting and thinking about food in a nice, in a what's the word, a nurturing way, rather than like, it's something you love. People love food unadulterated. There's nothing wrong with loving food.
I absolutely adore food. I'm obsessed with food. I'm obsessed with food shows. I don't go to fancy, expensive restaurants except with you, but
I'm a bougie baby. What can I say?
but no, except with you and a couple of friends. But I it's not restaurants. I love what I love about food is I love eating alone first. I know it sounds weird. I also love obviously sharing food with my friends, but what I mean is like, so that's why I quite like the death row meal because I'll be alone. And I think if I had to choose, I would ask if I could prepare it myself. So get the ingredients and put some music on or some radio. I don't know. I like radio because I like hearing people talk. And then get into this sort of hypnosis, and preparing something is as enjoyable for me as eating it. And especially if I'm making myself just something just for me with a big quantity of something. And I know I'm going to sit down and just enjoy that. And there'll be no distraction, no one talking to me, no one. And I just be me and the food. And it's a bit like making a song. It's like me and the work, me and the music. It's you're putting something there that responds to you and is good for you. And there's a pleasure in eating it. There's pleasure after you've eaten it, which sometimes turns into displeasure.
It does depend.
Definitely.
But like, what would be your
What would I
meal
cook?
you make?
Okay. I think it would be very simple. I think it would be, I'll make a salad, I think. I know it sounds really bad, but I think I'll make fresh cucumbers with like, amazing tomatoes from South of France or something. Fresh basil and amazing olive oil, like Mediterranean, something that is full of colors.
I'm fucking starving
And
now.
I know, right? It's lunchtime as well. Something that is just almost like unaltered, uncooked, but something that's been picked from the soil and the tree. I could eat a pear and be in heaven. Just because I remember the first time I picked a peach when I was a kid from a tree and put it in my mouth. Like literally, I did this and that, and that was a revelation to me because I was very young, but suddenly I was like, oh, nature. I think owning fruit trees, for instance, is a richness. Like it's being wealthy for me. That it's a real, gift of life. I don't, it blows my mind. I don't know why.
I remember the first time seeing like an orange tree in California, like on the street,
Yeah.
and I was like, "Is that an orange? What the
Oh,
fuck? Let me just have an orange in the street.
I
Everyone will get
know.
fucked." Do you know what I mean?
I know. Yeah, I
Can you
don't care about
imagine?
anybody else now.
Nah,
It's just
fuck
me and the
everyone.
tree.
Like, can you imagine being able to pick a mango though?
I know. Fuck, mango's amazing.
I think they're my
I
favorite.
know.
But
I
like,
know.
can
My
you
manager
just grab
in
it?
LA, he has like a pineapple, not pineapple. For the bigger orange, pamplemousse in French. I don't
Oh, grapefruit.
grapefruits and grapefruit trees. For fuck's sake, like
Oh, man.
yeah, it's
Okay.
like
That would be sick.
happiness.
Yeah, it is happiness. Yeah, fruit, I think, over veg in terms of like, when you see it, everything becomes technicolor. Like I love veg and all that shit, but like I prefer broccoli cooked. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
But seeing fruit in the wild, yeah, I never really thought about that. Apart from when I saw an orange in California, blew my mind. Anyway, so salad, fuck me. Yeah,
Is that sad?
it's just boring, isn't it? I'm joking. Right, so your album, I gotta say, I just wanted to say, well run. It's a natural transition musically, stylistically, but it still
Okay.
shocked me, like in a good way. I was like, this is sick. I was like, ah, oh, yeah, I feel it now. I feel it. Because like,
Okay.
so what was it like? It's amazing. I love it. And like, I'm not going to reference the music that it reminds me of and stuff like that. But like, I mean, I can, but
You
I don't know.
can, yeah.
That is kind of, I just think it's a bit fruitless, really. But like, the bands that I love that it reminds me of, it's like Deftones, and like, but it's heavy. It's heavy. And I was like, but you
It's
only know
very
it's
heavy.
heavy. It's heavy, but in a it like it's there's a playfulness to it. And I love it. So thanks very much.
Oh, you're
But
welcome.
it's fucking,
It
yeah, you've gone
is,
for
it's
it.
funny. I definitely, it was like this idea of if I'm bored, I delete. So I think that's what brought the heaviness to it. I definitely wanted something that was raw, very intense, straight to the point, but also have this sort of melancholia. I think I listened to a lot of Mike Patton, I listened to a lot of Faith No More. This idea of bringing the guitar forward and the melodies, and also vocally, I wanted to explore. So I started like a year ago, over a year ago now. I started like I connected with this amazing extreme vocal coach, and she taught me how to do a fry, how to scream, and I knew because I started on my own trying to learn it, and it took a while because. I mean, it takes like a year to be able to do like a decent fry without hurting yourself. And but I wanted my vocal range to be obviously I'm not at the level of Mike Patton, but I did want to try something that I had never tried before. So screaming, and I think the scream. You know, we live in a time that is so fucked up, and the world is broken. I feel broken. I felt broken. I feel better now, but. Displaced, you know, and I feel it's either you start to scream, but scream with joy, like scream liberating yourself with the scream, or you learn how to whisper, you know. But it's no middle ground right now, I feel.
Oh, fuck. No one needs in the middle ground. That's what's got us here in the fucking first place, isn't it?
No gray area.
All
Yeah,
this
I agree.
centrist bullshit. Well, thank you very much
Yeah.
for your screams. It's great. I love it. And
Yeah.
yeah, I was like, yes, it's great.
It is intense.
Yeah, but
Thank you for
like,
listening.
fuck it, of course. That's it. We're done. That was magic. Thank you so much.